Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
Microphone man.
Microphone
That's
man.
That's what they call me.
Oh, nice, nice. We also have Hottie Patati Will Schmidt here with us today. What's up, Will?
Yo, how's it going? Yo.
Do you have a nickname, Will? Microphone. They call me Microphone Man.
Also, it's confusing.
Also, is your nickname?
No, we're both Microphone.
Oh, okay, Microphone Man. That is probably not going to work out for us. Yeah. They're not going to make a show out of Microphone Man and Microphone Man.
I'll think of something.
Okay.
I'll try to
get back to
you. Yeah, on that. Today we're doing another Ask Tony show. These shows are always fun.
Yeah, because I like the variety of stuff.
Mm-hmm. We don't have to just stick on one subject the whole time and pound it into the ground. If you haven't followed us on Facebook yet, though, go to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we usually post all of our show topics that we'll be doing on future shows. And you guys can post any questions that you want us to cover in that show, or you can even ask us to do a particular show you want us to do.
Yeah, and somebody posted another review.
Ah, here we go. Another review. Another review. Nikki L. This show not only dives into natural health solutions, but the hosts have fun doing it. Sometimes we approach health in such a serious manner, but this show is both educational and entertaining. Great job.
Thank you, Nikki.
Nikki, that was sweet.
That if we were going to make one up, that's what it would say. Mm-hmm. It would say that right there. But yeah. So Nikki put a review on iTunes, and this is episode number 97, which means pretty soon is episode
100.
Yeah, so we're going to have a big party. Everyone's going to have a pointy hat that day. It might get in the way of the headsets a little bit. But we want pointy hats
on episode
100.
Is there
going to
be alcohol?
We're
going to
make it work.
A lot.
But we're going to give away some prizes. So to get entered in that prize, go to kickitinthenuts.com/iTunes, and it'll show you how to leave a review on either iTunes or Stitcher. So if you just subscribe, rate the podcast and leave us a review, then you'll automatically be entered to win prizes like a $100 Amazon gift card.
Ooh.
A free tub of complete protein powder.
Ooh, and when we say tub, we mean bathtub.
Mm-hmm. Free bathtub full. We'll ship you a whole
hammock of cake. You guys ever see that Simpsons episode?
No.
Shopping for Homer. Who gets a hammock of cake?
And somebody else is going to win one of the free 12-week fat loss courses. It's
someone
gonna be,
gets Will.
And then somebody wins Will.
Yeah.
We'll what are they going to win, Will?
Well,
Will.
Yeah, just me for a day. Whatever you want. Throw darts. I'll try to dodge them. No, it's a free exercise therapy session.
Through Skype.
Through Skype. So I do a lot of corrective exercises for people to help them get out of pain, or if you have like back pain or knee pain or something like that. So I'll look at your posture, look at your movement patterns, and then I'll create a set of exercises to help correct them and relieve pain. And then I'll make a video of that series of exercises that I'll send you a link to.
Right, nice. And Will normally charges $17,000 for that particular service. So these are serious prizes that we're talking about. And if you've already left us a review, which so many of you have, because we have 7 listeners, but we have 230-something reviews. So
each seven has been busy.
But if you've already left a review, then you will already be entered in there. So don't worry that you don't have a shot at winning a tub of Natural Selection Nutritionals Complete Protein. You're in there.
Yeah, and if you want to win something now, all you got to do, today's listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details.
Audible.com.
All right, so should we dive in?
Yeah,
let's
answer some questions.
All right, Karen from Billings, Montana. Are any of the numbers we monitor inductive of a parasite issue?
So we know a lot about parasites, and I know Karen is a coach too, and she knows some stuff, but here on the show all of us know some stuff about parasites, but none of us knew what inductive meant.
Well, I'm still in disagreement of the grammar of this. Inductive means, I believe, causative.
I think it means it does it relate to.
Oh
yeah.
Well, so, I mean, okay,
Karen, you've caused a lot of trouble
here.
Yeah,
I think that it's seductive baby brother.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that's what happens after you've been seducted. You've been inducted into the hall of having been slept with.
Wow, we're dumb. Okay, so what we'll say, Karen, is that none of the actual numbers would actually say, man, you got a parasite. You got the parasites loaded up the yin-yang, which I guess is where a lot of parasites are. But we will say that if you tested someone and you looked at a lot of the numbers and then you found out that they had parasites, there may be some things that then made sense. You might look at some of the numbers and say, oh, I could see where that would happen if there was like aliens in your body eating all of your food and pooping out in your body kind of stuff. So that's a possibility, but nothing really points to you have parasites. Now, one thing in when we see people is we have a questionnaire that we give them, and one of those questions is, do you have severe rectal itching? And there's a variety of issues that can cause severe rectal itching, but a major parasite infection is a common one of that. So if someone is the captain of all rectal itching, then I might say, why don't we look at some parasite stuff to see if that's going on.
You might have a parasite if you're doing the little dog butt thing if you're on running the carpet.
Right. So that's the only thing that I look at that makes me think that. But none of the other numbers are going to scream parasite. We should probably do a show just on parasites.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'll be about children.
Yeah, I was going to say babies are technically parasites, medically speaking. But
just as not
and
as much.
And spouses.
Yeah, right, but usually they don't have as much, cause as much rectal itching.
Right. Well, I don't know. But to test for parasites, you would probably want to do a stool sample. Is usually the best.
And you really want to do an advanced one, because there's a lot of stool samples that you can do with a doctor, and they... Like, you could send this same stool sample to four different labs, and they're going to get four different results. In a lot of cases, we've heard a lot of reports of that happening. So if there's a more advanced version that you can order, and maybe it's a more expensive, then do that if you're having concerns about parasites, because that seems to be the best way to figure things out. Just don't do the blue light special parasite test.
We're 99 cent parasite test.
If you see one on Groupon, don't do that.
All right. Hillary from Chicago, Illinois. Will you explain how insulin resistance creates fluid retention and how this leads to poor digestion? Can you weave the stomach acid basics and bile flow with what goes on in your body when you have sugar issues?
So before we get into any of this, because there's probably some things that we could talk about here, but understand that you can't really weave sugar issues back to digestive issues directly, but there's a lot of ways that it could come up. There's just no way to say, yeah, this is what's happening. So what I think me and Will could do now is put on our make-believe hat, and we can kind of make up some things that could cause some issues when you're thinking about... Remember, we have three more shows until we do pointy party hats. Today is make-believe.
Make-believe pretend hats.
Make-believe pretend hats. So one thing that's really interesting is that let's talk about HCL production first off. And I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but if someone has really severe sugar issues, like a type 2 diabetic that can't process carbohydrates correctly... then what kind of problem do you see that happening with something that might be used to help?
With stomach acid production?
Yeah.
Sugar issues related to stomach...
Wait a second, I think I'm thinking of something. Oh, I'm thinking of something totally different.
Okay.
Yeah, I made all that up. I put my make-believe hat on too
early.
You
got caught up in the imagery of it. You're all excited. Like, what color would mine be?
I don't know why I was thinking that. I was thinking about chloride.
Improv health.
I've got a lot of things to say about her question if you want me to just
go. Yeah, let's just get into that.
That's the real question.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, you've talked about this in your books. There's two different things that I want to really say in response to it. When people are not able to properly digest proteins or fats, they'll usually tend towards eating more carbohydrates because they get more energy out of it, and that can eventually develop into like an insulin resistance kind of situation.
That's a great one. That was a great make-believe hat. I didn't think about going that route.
Yeah, because you wrote about that, so you're probably just like, I wrote it, forget it. I don't need to say it again. I don't want to. So that's one way, like, be able to develop insulin resistance from that. But there's another thing when we look at insulin resistance as a product of impaired cellular respiration. Like when, say, for example, someone eats a lot of unsaturated, polyunsaturated fats, so like they're eating all this canola oil and these lousy, cheap plant oils that impair the cell's ability to make energy properly.
But everybody told us to eat those, so we're not saying you're a horrible person. Everybody's on board, like
taking your omegas and your avocados.
They told us to do all that, you know, corn oil kind of stuff.
Yeah. So whether you eat fried food or avocado or fish oil, whatever it is, those kind of fats can impair the cell's ability to use glucose for energy, which is what insulin resistance is. Like the cells not being able to oxidize glucose properly. I mean, there's different mechanics of why that can happen, but that's essentially what we're talking about.
Right. So glucose can be there in the system. It just can't be used properly. And that's just as much of a problem as not having any glucose coming in.
Yeah. So when that's happening, the cell's normal energy production is severely altered. And its normal energy production creates ATP and carbon dioxide. And these things, some fancy terms, are known as cardinal absorbents. Like these, if we go back to the awesome Dr. Ling, who we sometimes talk about, but we recently had Dr. Gerald Pollack on, who's talking more about this as well, about how things like ATP and other cardinal absorbents help to give energy and order to the cells. Like when we have ATP in the cells will, it changes the shape and charge of the proteins and the shape and organization of the water. And when that's correct, we've got this nice negative ionic charge and it creates like a little battery inside the cell. And that's how like things actually happen with energy exchanges and cellular functions, as well as cellular regulation of hydration. So the amount of water and electrolytes and the position of those electrolytes is all controlled through the proper regulation of this living state. So when cellular energy production is impaired, you don't get those cardinal absorbents. So water and electrolytes fall into disarray and you'll get things like edema and swelling, as well as cellular malfunction, because the whole circuitry of the cell is screwed. And with that, you'll get things like this inflammation and swelling. So that can happen whether or not you have stomach acid and bile flow going, but that's one way.
And an interesting way to look at that is that in that situation where the body's having a hard time getting everything to function correctly, a lot of times resources that could have been used to make stomach acid and to help the body function and digest correctly would then get shunted towards this more of an emergency situation. So don't view it like fluid retention is shutting off your digestion. That's not the case. But the problem that's creating that fluid retention could also be restricting the body's ability to function in a way that it can digest food correctly.
Yeah.
And so it's a this and that are happening, but not causative so much.
Yeah. And one really interesting way that that can happen is not only in like making it harder for the body to properly make enough hydrochloric acid and bile, and for that bile to flow, those are all also ways. But one way you can look at it is like when muscle cells are inflamed, they can't function right. Right, the intestinal tract is made up of smooth muscle. So if we've got this energy deprivation, situation
scenario, make believe scenario,
where there's like a bunch of polyunsaturated fats impairing cellular respiration, and that's causing them to fall into disarray, not have energy for proper function, and to go into edema.
And one important thing is that the polyunsaturated fats creating a problem is just one possible option. There's a lot of things that could be creating problems.
It could be
tons.
It could be elevated estrogen. It could be heavy metals. It could be nitric oxide. It could be excess lactate.
And especially the crazy insulin levels that are creating other problems with all kinds of stress hormones and stuff like that.
Sure. So yeah, all those things could be impacting the smooth muscle of the intestines, which, just like if you think of like a bicep, like if you did a workout with your biceps, it gets all swollen.
I've done a workout with biceps before.
Like, so you're doing a bunch of curls, and what happens to the muscle? As it fatigues and runs out of ATP, it starts to swell and get tired, right? So it gets weaker and weaker, and it's like harder to move it around. It doesn't. So that can happen also to the smooth muscle of the small intestine, where it'll start to get inflamed and weaker and less capable of contracting, which is how it, through peristalsis, moves stuff through the intestinal tract. So with an inflamed, weak intestine, you'll get constipated and have a harder time moving stuff through the system. And that could happen because of this whole cellular metabolism problem.
Right. So we're kind of showing a lot of possibilities here, but just don't look at them like they're all connected, like you're kind of asking with. Just view it as problems that are creating one issue can also be creating other issues as well and magnify them.
So now we just gave her a whole bunch more questions.
Right.
All right. So Noreen, circulation and blood clots. What can be done? I'm sure it has something to do with what we eat and digestion. So what can be done to keep the blood healthy, thinned if needed, and moving? Everywhere I turn at my age of 57, someone is dealing with blood thinners or have had clots. If bile can get sticky, then can blood? That's a good question. There's so many people in my family that have had blood clots.
Good job, Noreen. So
I'd like to listen to this.
Yeah, let's go ahead and listen to this then. So one thing that the most important thing to look at with blood clots, and this is not Tony Hale's view, this is actually the medical world's view, is the first question that they will ask you if someone has any type of blood clot is, are you on birth control? Because the ability for birth control to raise estrogen levels seems to be one of the biggest factors that can create that clotting effect. And if you're on birth control and you have a blood clot, they say, oh, that's great, you're done with that now. Do not take that again. And they won't allow you to take the birth control anymore. So it's amazing that that's the medical world's view on it, but yet they still want to hand out birth control like it's a Tic Tac.
If you're a man and they ask you if you're on birth control, then that's odd.
Well, I'm on birth control, yeah. But that's different. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's a big factor, is you have to consider estrogen when you're looking at this. And when you look at all the things in our nutritional society now that raise estrogen levels, it makes sense that a lot more people are experiencing clots and that we see that all the time.
So like soy and things like that, you could probably get rid of.
Right. That could be a big deal. So I think that that's a very important thing to look at. The problem is it's definitely not the only thing to look at.
It's not. And one, I've actually seen it where the blood is like linked together a lot in different labs that I've been a part of. But one of the things about blood sticking together, it's called rouleau, or these different aggregations that can, it's the protein fibers will actually like link together with other cells. And that's happening again from a disturbance in like the regular cellular health, tied into all the cellular respiration stuff we just talked about in the last question. But when cells have what they need, the proteins are organized in a way where the blood is fluid and it doesn't stick together. But when that whole cellular circuitry is compromised due to anything that impaired regular cellular respiration, the blood cells can start to link together and stick together. So estrogen is one thing that can do that. A bunch of like noxious exotoxins from intestinal bacteria can cause that. Too much cortisol can cause that. Too much nitric oxide from crazy pre-workout supplements can cause that. All sorts of things can cause that.
Even just filth can make things thicken up and be not as flowy as somebody wants them. People like stuff to be flowy. And when it's not flowy, I'm trying to figure out how many times I can use the word flowy.
Yeah, I think that's enough.
So, but you know, some things that you could look at are you know, what is your blood pressure? You could look at things like specific gravity on those 11 parameter dipsticks that we use, and what kind of things are pointing to, hey, your blood is more like pancake syrup than it is blood. And of course the person can be really tired from the heart just trying to have to pump pancake syrup all day long. But, so there's a lot of things that a person can do to thin the blood if it's too thick, but that's not the only factor when it comes to clotting. You got to look at all this other stuff. So don't view, how do I just keep my blood thin? Because if it's thin, but you got all kinds of estrogen issues or some other problem, you could still create clot issues.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the normal answer would be some something like aspirin could be recommended. And it is used a lot when people, like doctors, go on planes. They're like, I always take a baby aspirin before I do that to prevent blood clotting. And it's known to have highly anti-estrogenic effects. And that's one of the things we're looking at. Like, oh, if estrogen's a main culprit and aspirin can combat that, yeah, it makes kind of sense that aspirin is a common go-to for most people. But like you're saying, you want to look at what are the things that are impairing the health of my cells, you know, which could be too much estrogen, it could be insulin resistance, it could
being
be
sediment all the time, you know, just not really moving.
Oh, sedentary.
If, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you're like in a hospital bed or
sure, yeah, all those different factors can come into play. But when we look at like different steps to correct it, you want to see like what is off in your scenario and then take steps to, you know.
Yeah, but when I think about it now, most of the clients that I've seen that had blood clot issues were not only on birth control, but they also had very low blood pressure. So their blood was not very thick. It was actually more towards the thin side, but enough problems were being caused by the raised estrogen levels that it happened.
Yeah, it doesn't. You don't have to have high blood pressure for that whole sticky thing of like protein fibrins to connect to each other. It's not a matter of like there's too many of us or there's right. too much pressure. It's like, do the cells have what they need to maintain their normal shape, structure, and function, or not?
Cool.
All right, Virginia. Soaking or soaking and then sprouting grains and legumes is supposed to neutralize anti-nutrients in them and make them more digestible. Since a lot of us are dealing with digestion issues, what are your thoughts on soaking and sprouting? And do you agree it makes grains and legumes more digestible? Or do you think that soaking and sprouting is just an old load of hogwash? I know you want to keep carbohydrates low, so I'm not asking for an excuse to scarf down carbs, which I promise I'm not going to do. I'm just curious what y'all think about whether or not soaking and sprouting increase digestibility of grains and legumes. Thanks.
So there's a lot of stuff to talk about in here. Before I forget, though, me and Will were talking about how we know we confuse people sometimes. So, you know, we talk about keeping carbs low in the fat book, especially because when weight loss is the goal, you want to keep that insulin level from spiking too high, and that's usually an important thing. But I don't want people to get confused at thinking that everybody needs to go real low carb. We talk a lot in the book how a lot of people really need some medium carbs. But beyond that, if the goal is not weight loss, then for some people, they don't need to go real carb. And they can do that, you know, doing some grains and stuff could be okay. Okay, so when we look at the soaking and sprouting and all that thing of grains and legumes and whether somebody should even be eating that, there is a lot of evidence out there about the soaking and sprouting of grains and legumes and how it can remove some of the proteins and the coatings and things like that that are causing a lot of problem. I totally agree with all that. I'm totally fine with it. You know, if you understand that most animals have a defense mechanism, a lot of grains and legumes are kind of believed to have this defense mechanism of causing intestinal discomfort for a lot of animals that would eat it. And so that kind of gets the animal not to eat it. And that's kind of its version of antlers or a sword face that some fish might have or something like that. So if you understand that, then you can see how doing the type of soaking and sprouting that can remove some of those cofactors found in those grains or legumes, then it could be beneficial in that regard. But we find that if someone has some type of food sensitivity issue to these things, that sometimes soaking and sprouting can help a lot and sometimes it's not enough. Do you want to chime some of this?
Yeah. I mean, there's grains and beans aren't the only foods that are like this. Like some foods can be really problematic when they're raw. Just like certain vegetables, like the broccoli and cabbage thing, that can inhibit thyroid function to a degree. But if you cook it, it kind of changes it. It changes the ball game. So if you find that certain foods digest better that you, when you cook them or sprout them or soak them, that's a good sign. Like if you're getting a lot of intestinal bloating or gas, that is a sign that that food is being fermented poorly. And it's creating exotoxins like certain types of lactic acid, like D-lactic acid, that can interfere with cellular metabolism and create inflammation and create all sorts of like autoimmune responses in the body. And that's not a good thing. So experiment with the food, even if it's like a piece of fruit. Like there might be some fiber in a piece of fruit that gives you problems and you get really gassy, like say a raw apple or something like that. So experiment with those foods, and if you can get it so you can consume the food and it doesn't make you bloated or gassy, that's a good thing. And there's a lot of evidence, like you talked about, as well as just theoretical approach to looking at eating grains. Yeah, they're digestive inhibitory enzymes. Some of them do dissolve when they're soaked in water because they're thinking, hey, I made it through this animal's intestinal tract and now I'm in the soil and now it's time to grow. So the shells can like break down their inhibitory enzymes and prepare the plant to grow. So with that, there's also arguably like more nutrition that somehow magically appears once the seed sprouts.
Maybe it's just more available to the body.
Yeah. However it is, I think it can be a good thing if you are able to eat those foods at all. Then, you know, finding the way where it sits best in your digestion is a good thing.
Right. So if it's new to you that, you know, I talk a lot about removing grains and legumes and, you know, using a paleo approach as the base and then altering things from that base. But if it's new to you and you find that maybe soaking or sprouting some of these things to try and go that route is an easier thing, I'm okay with that. But one thing to consider, you know, you don't hear this about all things, but there's my understanding is some of these things like the sprouted tortillas and stuff like that can, the way that some people do those and make them can cause fungus issues and fungal problems with that particular food. So you got to consider some of that too. Don't feel like just because something is sprouted that it's perfect. There can be problems on a wide variety of things that you might not be considering. But I do like to see someone at least remove grains and legumes completely for at least a month and just see how you do, because they could be causing a lot of problems that you don't understand. So I like to see people remove them, and if they put them back in after a month and they see problems come back, they know that's a problem. Maybe you remove them again and then you try some sprouted versions of those things and see if you do okay on the sprouted versions. And that might give you more information to what's going on with you.
All right. That's it. If you'd like to learn more about how to look at... Okay, let's start over. If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration happens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
And only 3 episodes left until we give away thousands of dollars in cash and prizes. So get your review on iTunes or Stitcher before episode number 100.
Because it's happening fast, people. All right. And if you want to learn more how to look at your own chemistry, go to... You can
really?
Read any
you
of Tony's
you
books.
You don't remember
this is
that
not,
by now?
Yeah, no.
You have to look at the page.
I was asleep for a lot of this episode. Okay, so yeah, you can read any of Tony's books, or you can take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com, or you can head on over to Will's mybodyofknowledge.net page, where he's got a bunch of exercises, pain relief stuff, and blogs. And so, yeah.
Nailed it.
Blogs. All right. Tune in for next week. We have 3 more episodes. Get your reviews in.
Bye-bye.
Bye.